Blog Talk Radio.
The Code Red Radio Show with Alfred McCumber is brought to you in part by Child Shield USA. For over 26 years, Child Shield USA has been helping parents, grandparents, and legal guardians protect their kids from becoming reported missing, abducted, or sexually assaulted. Find out how you can better protect your children by visiting www.childshieldusa.com. That's www.childshieldusa.com.
Well, good morning and welcome to another episode of the Code Red Radio Show, specifically dedicated to personal security, safety, and emergency preparedness issues across America and around the world. I'm your longtime host, Alfred McCumber. It's Wednesday, October 19th, 2016, and on this morning's broadcast, we are going to be talking with Justin McNall. He is the Vice President of Public Affairs at eDriving.com. He's going to be dropping by the show in just a few moments to talk about National Teen Driver Safety Week, which is actually running October 16th through the 22nd of this month. We are going to be discussing tips, strategies, and even available resources to help both parents and teens increase their safety while driving or even just being a passenger in a vehicle. Later in the show, Melvin S. Patterson with the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency Administration is actually going to be stopping by the show. He's going to be discussing the DEA's upcoming National Prescription Drug Takeback Day, which is taking place in local communities across the United States this coming Saturday, October 22nd, 2016. Now, as you know, the Code Red Radio Show is a live and interactive show. So remember, if you've got questions for our guests, don't hesitate. Pick up your phone and give us a call at our live studio hotline on 323-642-1180. Again, that is 323-642-1180. And with no further ado, please help me welcome Mr. Justin McNall to the show. Justin, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We're very, very excited to have you join us because, as you know, this whole issue of driving and keeping our teen drivers safe is a very, very important one that can result in saving lives as well as preventing injuries. And one of the things that parents need to keep in mind is that there are things that they can do in their own driving to actually set a good example for teens as part of Teen Driver Safety Week. So if you're a parent listening in, be sure you might want to actually grab a pen because Justin's going to be sharing some very, very good information and some great resources that you can use to have real conversations with younger drivers in your household. So, Justin, tell us a little bit about the ongoing work of eDriving.com and their affiliated companies.
Sure. eDriving is a combination of companies that are really focused on trying to create smart drivers, trying to get drivers who will scan 360 degrees to get a total picture, who will manage their attitudes and emotions behind the wheel, who are accountable for the choices they make, they're ready to do anything behind the wheel if they need to, and they're tuned in and focused on their driving. And it starts with teenagers through driversed.com, where we teach kids the knowledge they need to become safe drivers as well as behind the wheel in a couple states. We also continue through traffic school for seasoned drivers who might need a brush up. And we also, through eDriving Fleet, are one of the largest trainers of fleet drivers in the country, helping companies manage the risk of their fleets of drivers out there through our virtual risk manager product. So it's from starting to drive to being a seasoned driver. There are lots of things we can do to help you out.
Absolutely. And, you know, interestingly, your company is actually based out of Oakland, California. You've got a presence in Southern California down in the Carlsbad area, but you actually have instructors literally all across the country. Tell us a bit about this.
We have more than 200 behind-the-wheel instructors who are out there working with teenagers and other new drivers every day in California, in Georgia, and in Texas. We have we actually have some of the PhD research folks who are over in the UK who are involved in manage the fleet side of us. We have our Virtual Risk Manager product, which has had 6 different validation studies done on it. It's been involved in 60 different research projects, so it's some legitimate science-based research. We have engineers in San Luis Obispo in California who are helping us on the telematics side with data analytics to look at the driving that people do that we can track through apps to help determine what they're doing well, what they're not doing well, and how we can improve it. So it's pretty cool seeing the way that the old school stuff and the new technology can come together.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned data, because so much has changed now that there's data and resource information that can really work toward, you know, helping people be smarter drivers and realize that there are so many things going on behind the wheel. So that data, I imagine, is very, very helpful to companies, especially companies that have fleets and so forth.
We have smartphones, we increasingly have smart cars, and we want to make sure that we have smart drivers. And whether that's you as an individual understanding what you do just at a more basic level, am I aware, am I slowing down, am I focused, to are there things that the data being produced while I drive, either by my vehicle or apps we can have on a phone, to really take a look at your braking, your accelerating, your turning, other aspects of the vehicle dynamics to understand your driving better and how you can be safer. Increasingly, we're seeing insurers interested in this. Flo from Progressive has wanted to put something in your car for a couple of years to go ahead and save you money on insurance, and we want to help you understand your driving so that you can position yourself well to get the best discounts you can, and more importantly, to keep yourself safe.
You bring a very unique perspective to your job at eDriving.com because you actually have a law enforcement background. Tell us a little bit about this, because I know when we start talking about some of these issues with teen drivers and drivers in general, as a law enforcement officer, you've obviously seen a lot of different things out there over your years.
Yeah, and just as you've experienced, and a lot of driving instructors also come from law enforcement backgrounds, we've seen what goes wrong when people make mistakes behind the wheel. And by and large, the mistakes people make really aren't about not having the skills to handle things. It's about not having the right attitude or the right behavior. About 94% of crashes, in fact, are not about skills. They're about attitudes and behavior and how we can get people to stay focused on their driving and make a couple simple changes to keep themselves safe. And from a parent standpoint, to make sure that your teen, even if your teen's not yet driving, even if it's a 10-year-old, even if it's a 5-year-old, that you're showing them the kind of disposition and the kind of approach to driving that will make that teen a safe, that will make your youngster a safe driver.
Absolutely. And there's plenty of resources available for parents to kind of open up those conversations with their teen drivers, because part of the problem is, even if you're involved when your child is learning how to drive, whether it's through a private instructor, through a school, or you're teaching them yourself, at some point, those drivers are going to be driving without you in the vehicle. So it's very, very imperative that you're setting a good example for teens as part of, you know, just helping them be prepared for what's really, really involved. So, Justin, tell us a little bit about some of these examples that, you know, older drivers, adults that have kids should be, practicing on a regular basis.
We've actually put together a smart driving guide as part of Teen Driver Safety Week with 16 principles to help keep you crash-free, and it's a useful thing for parents to read. It's a useful thing for parents to discuss with their kids, and you can find that at eDriving.com. But really a key piece of it is slow down, focus on your driving, and a phrase we use a lot of giving one more second. By increasing your following distance from 2 seconds to 3 seconds, it lets you see what's in front of you, lets you react to it, lets you make appropriate decisions because you've had the knowledge and of what's going on, and you can adjust based on it. So really it's about being the kind of driver that you would want your teen to be, and realizing don't wait until your teen's 16 to start acting that way. If you've got a 10-year-old who sees you on your phone when you're driving, that 10-year-old is going to think that's normal. It's going to think that's okay, and is going to become that kind of a driver when he or she's 16.
Absolutely. And that creates, you know, part of the challenge, because sometimes you and I have both seen out in patrol cars some of the things that people do. You just kind of shake your head. You and I were talking yesterday, just simple things like giving yourself some distance, you know, when you're coming to a traffic light or a traffic stop, so that if someone behind you doesn't stop in time, it gives you a little bit of distance. But if there's an emergency, a safety concern, and you need to exit the area, you know, just giving those few extra, you know, feet can make a big difference.
It is. It's about positioning. And it's that chance that if you look up in the rearview mirror and you see the car behind you is coming in a little quickly, you can at least get your foot off the brake and you can try to roll up a couple more feet, hoping that the other driver will stop short and stop before the front bumper hits your rear bumper.
Absolutely. You know, we're going to talk more about the smart driving guide in our next segment. So we're going to cover some of those 16 principles that will help keep you crash free. And this is available for download again, for download. So if you'd like to get a copy of that, Justin, you mentioned they can go to edriving.com to be able to download that. Be sure to also check out the website, www.driversed.com as well. Again, www.driversed.com. You know, another resource that's out there, you might want to jot this down, it's www.teendriversource.org. Again, that's teendriversource.org. And this has been developed by the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia Research Institute dealing with teen driver, you know, situations. Here's some of the risk factors. Alcohol is actually involved in about 16% of fatal crashes involving 16- and 17-year-old drivers. But what causes the other 84%? The first item as a risk factor is inexperience. You've got about 900,000 U.S. teens reported that they were drivers in at least one crash within a 12-month period. The right kind of experience involves a lot of supervised driving practices and then avoiding high-risk conditions for at least the first 6 months of being a driver on their own. And about two-thirds of fatal teen crashes involve driver error, making mistakes due to inexperience and distractions. Let's talk quickly about this issue of distractions, especially for teenage drivers. Certainly, what happens oftentimes when you get two or more peer passengers, the chance of a risk of a fatal crash actually triples with a teen at the wheel. If you would, Justin, tell us a little bit about this, because this is a challenge that oftentimes, you know, kids are going to high school and they're going to get in the car and everyone's going to go home, or they're going out to celebrate something. And we see a lot of these crashes, not only here in the Washington, D.C. area, but also throughout the country.
Yeah, we've learned a lot about the risks involved in having passengers in cars, just the distractions that passengers can pose to drivers, as well as at times drivers feeling like they need to perform a little bit for passengers. And I've had the privilege professionally to help push graduate driver licensing across the country. And the graduate driver licensing, it varies from state to state, but it's the rules related to new drivers not being allowed to drive after a certain time at night, not being allowed to drive with more than one teen passenger in the car with them. And a lot of it is because we know that teens crash more at night, driving-wise. It's a more complex driving environment. We know that teens with other teens in the car crash more often, and those crashes can be severe. Some of it is bad peer pressure, but a lot of it's just about distractions, just about well-intended teens who end up losing focus on their driving.
Yes, absolutely. You know, a driver who talks on a cell phone is four times more likely to be involved in a serious crash, regardless of whether it's a hands-free cell phone. And a lot of jurisdictions around the United States have actually put in place certain laws so that folks can't drive and talk on their phone at the same time. Also, talking or texting on a cell phone while driving is dangerous for teen drivers because it actually takes their focus off the road. And this is such an important part of safety. You've got to have your eyes on the road. You've got to be aware of what is going on. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Justin McNall. He is the Vice President of Public Affairs at eDriving.com, and we're talking about things that you can do as a parent to help your child stay safe behind the wheel. You're listening to the Code Red Show with Alfred McCumber. We'll be right back.
Are you properly prepared to survive a criminal attack or even a natural or man-made disaster right this very moment? In today's dangerous world, you must be prepared before disaster strikes. Security Intelligence Bureau, located online at securityintelligencebureau.com, is a recognized leader in high-quality personal security, safety, and emergency preparedness products and services designed to keep you safe and secure in today's unsafe world. From the most highly effective pepper sprays, stun guns, and personal protection devices to high-quality first aid kits, automatic external defibrillators, emergency preparedness gear, supplies, and even 5-year shelf life food and water rations, Security Intelligence Bureau has the products you need to protect you, your family, your business, or your agency. Whether you're at home, in your vehicle, at work, or at play, Security Intelligence Bureau can help provide you with the peace of mind of knowing you're properly prepared to deal with any personal crisis, disaster, or emergency. Don't wait till disaster strikes. Visit securityintelligencebureau.com today. That's securityintelligencebureau.com. Certain product possession restrictions apply.
Eric was struck by a teenage driver who was texting.
There were four of us in the car that evening. My mom got a phone call. Amanda drove off an embankment while texting her friend.
They shot across the road and hit a tree.
I barely remember Brett losing control before everything went black. And when I came to, I was pinned in the car and my headlights illuminated the spot where Donovan lay on the road. No text is worth your life. I never thought it could happen to me.
Distracted driving, it's not worth it. Visit whatslethal.com. A message from the CHP and the Office of Traffic Safety.
Welcome back to the Code Red Radio Show, specifically dedicated to your personal security, your safety, and, of course, your emergency preparedness. Joining us live is Mr. Justin McNall. He is the Vice President of Public Affairs at eDriving.com, and he's dropped by the show today to talk about National Teen Driver Safety Week, which is running October 16th through this coming Saturday, October 22nd, 2016. You know, Justin, this whole issue of keeping our kids safe, in a lot of ways, it boils down to being aware of what's going on and having command of your vehicle, but also looking out for the other guy. Because so often in these accidents, you may actually be doing the proper thing, and then all of a sudden a crash happens.
And that's where awareness and giving yourself time to react are key parts of it. And as experienced seasoned drivers, we generally have the knowledge to do it. We generally have the skills to do it. It's just a question of do we have the right attitude, and is that attitude guiding our behavior? And building from that, it's not that hard for our teens to get the physical skills to keep the car between the white and the yellow lines or to figure out how to parallel park. Well, maybe that one's a little tougher. But it's about showing them the right attitudes and getting them the experience they need behind the wheel to ensure that they're going to drive, be cautious, smart drivers behind the wheel.
Absolutely. And remember, if you have questions for Justin, don't hesitate. Pick up your phone. Give us a call on 323-642-1180. Again, that's 323-642-1180. You know, Justin, I think back to my times going through three different police academies and time spent on the driving range and really understanding the dynamics of your vehicle and understanding that there are so many things going on, you know, when you're behind the wheel. I'm so glad that eDriving has produced a very, very informative, smart driving guide. And it's available again at eDriving.com or DriversEd.com. So let's talk about some of the 16 principles that can actually help keep you potentially free from an accident. Now, the forward of this particular document is from Celia Stokes. She's actually the CEO of eDriving. And she mentions that 94% of crashes or collisions are a consequence of a driver's attitude or behavior. In other words, we could eliminate nearly all crashes if everyone just stayed more focused, made better decisions, and demonstrated more self-control on the road. Let's talk first about what does it mean to be a smart driver? If you would, Justin, first is S. Tell us about that.
Sure. We worked through a pretty simple rubric, SMART driver, S-M-A-R-T. S for smart, scan 360 degrees to build up a total picture. Know what's going on around you. It means using your mirrors. It means having your head up and scanning.
We see a lot of accidents that occur on the roadway because people are not checking their blind spot and they're just so focused on the front side of their vehicle that they never check the rear view mirrors. They're not checking their side mirrors. They're not giving themselves some distance. I'm sorry, I cut you off there.
Oh, no, and it begins when you're pulling out, even when you're getting into the car, getting ready to pull out of the parking lot. See what's around you. Are there kids who are getting into it, you know, toddlers who are, you can see getting out of the car next to you? Or is there a bike lane next to you so you don't have to worry about dooring a cyclist who's coming through the bike lane? And that carries across to when you're headed down the interstate to check your blind spots.
Absolutely. The second is M. Tell us about that.
Manage your attitudes and emotions. Recognize that when you're behind the wheel, driving is your top priority. It's the most important thing for you. Whatever bad things might have happened in your world, whatever might have you frustrated or upset, you've got to be able to check that and stay focused on getting to your destination safely. If you can't do that, hold off on driving for a little bit.
You know, it's so interesting you mentioned the attitudes and emotions, because I'm seeing more and more instances of road rage where people are just so upset. And it's very concerning, because when you have those emotions running high, you can find yourself doing reckless things that can really impact your life forever in terms of fatalities and even you know, major injuries and so forth. A stands for be accountable. Tell us about this.
Be accountable for the choices you make, and this really does blend in with some of the road rage type discussion. Recognize that you're the driver. You're responsible for what happens behind the wheel. You're responsible for the interactions that you have with other drivers. And in the traffic safety world, we've, in the across the last decade or so, been really focused on trying to address traffic safety culture, to build a culture of safety. And it's, we've had success, certainly, in commercial aviation, of getting pilots to be willing to step up and say something if there's an issue, of getting flight crews to the maintenance guys to say, hey, this flight might not take off on time, but we've got to address this issue here. We're trying to get drivers to recognize all the things that are within your control that you should be doing to stay safe, that it's not simply about how quickly you can get from one place to another, but about making sure that you get there and that your fellow drivers can get there as well. Because what happens on the road isn't just about you. We as drivers all have this, there's sort of a culture of what happens on our roads that we're all responsible for.
No question about it. The fourth letter in the word SMART is R, and that stands for be ready. Tell us about this.
Be ready to respond to anything. It's about following distance. It's about scanning. It's about understanding what your escape routes are. That if you are merging on into traffic and you're not able to get into that merge lane, is it safe for me to hit my brakes? Am I worried about the guy behind me? Is there some shoulder I could drive on for a little bit if I have to, if that truck, if that motorcycle, whatever it is that's coming through, doesn't give me room to get into? Know the other places that you can go.
You know, the last letter in the word SMART is T, and that stands for be tuned in.
Be tuned in and focus on the drive. And distraction, distractions have been around for decades in cars. There was concern when cassette tape players, when 8-track players got put in. There's concern when windshield wipers got put on cars. How are they going to impact drivers' ability to see what's in front of them? But the technology that's in our pockets, in our purses now, has such a stronger pull than anything previously has. It'll pull your eyes off the road if you're looking at a device. It'll take your hands off the wheel if you're texting. But most importantly, it takes your brain. There's the cognitive distraction that even if you're using a hands-free phone, even if you're using voice-to-text or a voice-activated system in your car, there's a brain drain that happens that diverts some of your attention away from driving. And that diversion of attention, it lingers. It's not you put the phone down and your brain's immediately 100% going again. Just as if you're working in the office and you get a phone call, or you're working in the wood shop and your kid pops in and says, hey, I need something from you. After that interruption's done, you take the couple of seconds and say, okay, where was I? That happens in the office. That happens at home. That happens behind the wheel when you return from that distraction. It takes a couple seconds to get focused again. It actually can take up to 27 seconds, according to research. So you got to avoid the temptation. Turn the phone off. Put it in your purse. Put it in the trunk. Put it in the glove box. Stay focused on the road.
So it really is about being in the moment that makes so much sense. You know, some of this stuff, folks, may sound very, very basic. And as I always tell people in personal security, safety and emergency preparedness, most of it is pretty basic. But hearing it and really understanding and comprehending it and then making a real effort to keep these things in mind. You know, Justin, there's so much great information that we're talking about today. Is there a chance you can stay with us through the next break and we'll cover even more information?
Sure, absolutely.
Great. Well, let's talk about these actual 16 principles. And again, folks, this is available information. You can actually go to edriving.com or driversed.com and get access to this guide that we're talking about. One of the first principle in the 16 principles is keep a 3-second gap. Tell us about this.
In basic driver ed, a lot of us were taught that you need a 2-second following distance, 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi. But by adding that third second in there, it takes that 3/4 of a second or so for your brain to, for your eyes to see something, your brain to process it and to start to act. And it gives you so much more cushion so that if your brain's moving a little more slowly or it takes you a 1/2 second to see something, start to react to it, you can then follow through on your action. So that 3-second gap gives you a better view of the road, more time to react, and more space to take the action that you need to avoid a hazard.
Indeed. I really like the second one.
And that's a minimum. If there's bad road conditions, if it's rainy, if it's dark, if it's snowing, if there's slick leaves out there, you can add extra time.
Mm-hmm. We refer to that as slow your roll. You know, it's
exactly.
One of those things. I really like the second one from the not only the law enforcement side of my career, but also the high-level dignitary protection side of my career, this idea of scan, scan, scan. This is an important one. Tell us about this.
It is, and certainly as young cops, we were taught commentary driving, and it was a new thing for a lot of us, talk about the things that you see as you're driving down the road, and that was a little bit of sort of that awareness of what's going on in the community around you, and it wasn't just about traffic enforcement. As young drivers now, it's normal in driver ed for us to teach kids to engage in commentary driving, to make sure, to tell us where your eyes are looking, what you're looking at, where you're going. I'm looking ahead for a couple seconds. I'm checking my left mirror. There's a truck behind me there. He's okay. Well, I'm looking over my right mirror. I see a motorcycle who's going to be merging in. I need to go ahead and give him space. There's a cyclist that's coming up at the intersection. Make sure that you're processing, that you're looking around and processing what's going around, that you simply don't have tunnel vision straight ahead.
You know, the third principle here is to check your speed. And I'm right here in the Washington, D.C. area, and Justin, I know you're here in the D.C. metropolitan area, and this is a hard area to drive because our roads are so crowded and so forth, and oftentimes, if you're going the speed limit, you're literally being passed by vehicles that are doing, you know, 75, 80, 90 miles an hour, but this checking your speed is really, really important because the fact is it kills thousands of people every year. Just to give you an example, last year in 2015, roughly over 36,000 traffic fatalities and over 4.4 million injuries as a result of traffic accidents. So talk about this issue of speed and why it is so important to keeping people safe on the roadways of America.
Speed's a multiplier. It reduces the amount of time and distance that you have to react to things that happen ahead of you. If you're traveling faster than the speed limit, it's harder for other drivers to gauge what you're doing. If you do have to hit the brakes real quickly, it's going to take you longer to stop. If you have a crash, there's more energy involved in that crash, which means there's more potential for injury. So we know on so many levels that speed is a challenge, and yet there's still a public challenge of speed that within the traffic safety community we wrestle with. We're decades in the fight against drunk driving and have been able to sort of villainize impaired driving in that way. We're a decade plus in talking about distracted driving, and most people have a pretty good sense of what they should be doing and what they shouldn't be doing. Even belt use, seat belts. We've made huge strides in seat belt use in the last 30 years to the point now where pretty much everybody buckles up pretty much every time. It's not as good as it should be. But speeding, it still gets sort of winked at by a lot of people that if you're just driving 5 or 10 miles an hour over the limit, that's fine. But speed can be a real killer. And it's a challenge that traffic safety folks wrestle with. And as driving instructors, it's something that we especially have to impress upon young drivers. Drive the speed limit. Give yourself the time that you need to see what's going on around you. And it's only going to cost you 30 seconds on a trip across town to go the speed limit versus going 5 miles an hour faster.
Yes, indeed. And then, of course, the other thing is leave earlier. That's so often when I would have traffic stops and you'd pull somebody over that was going way too fast, and usually they were late for work or they were late picking up the kids from daycare, and this causes such a major, major concern. We're talking with Justin McNall. He's the Vice President of Public Affairs at eDriving.com. Be sure to check out that website as well as DriversEd.com. We're going to continue our conversation in just a few moments. You're listening to the Code Red Show with Alfred McCumber. We will be right back.
Every 28 seconds, a car in the U.S. is stolen. What's even more shocking is that 25% of those vehicles had the keys inside. 60% were left unlocked, and 95% had no anti-theft devices. In times like these, protect yourself from auto theft by taking extra precautions. Never leave your vehicle running or with the keys in the ignition. Always lock your doors and keep your windows closed, even when parked in front of your own home. When away, park in busy, well-lighted places and never leave valuables in plain view. Equip your car or truck with an alarm or other theft deterrent device. Never leave your vehicle registration in your car. If you do become a victim of auto theft, report it immediately. Have your make, model, license plate, and vehicle ID number available to help authorities recover your vehicle. To learn more about protecting yourself from auto theft, visit ncpc.org or contact your local law enforcement agency.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Hey, welcome back. We're talking about National Teen Driver Safety Week and some of the important tips and strategies and available resources that can help both parents and teens increase their safety while driving or even just being a passenger in a vehicle. Our special guest is Justin McNall. He's the Vice President of Public Affairs at eDriving.com. Be sure to write down that website, eDriving.com, and also DriversEd.com, because there's some great tips that you can kind of key into when it comes to safe driving for your teenage drivers in your household or even yourself. You know, let's talk about principle number 4 of the 16 principles, and that's limited view, slow down.
If you can't see what's ahead of you, you need to slow down. You're probably going too fast. As a young cop in Arlington in the 1990s, Arlington, Virginia, I put my wife through grad school, working a red light enforcement program at one intersection, and probably a third or half of the people we wrote tickets to were going too fast, and there was a sun glare, so they couldn't see and couldn't respond to the red light, or they were trying to pull around a metro bus and would end up running through the red light. And if they would just slow down and be patient, they wouldn't have been in that spot. They wouldn't have gotten a ticket. They wouldn't have been at risk of being involved in a crash. So if you can't see what's ahead of you, you got to slow down.
You know, side note to that, you mentioned buses. The other big challenge that we're seeing across the nation is the number of drivers that think that it's perfectly okay to pass a school bus with the red lights flashing. I mean, it just amazes me that people can't see this big yellow bus and pump the brakes and just take a chill pill so that we can keep our young kids safe.
And in a lot of states, those fines go up to $500 now. So if that's what it takes to get you to behave, let that be the reason to do it, even if you can't recognize the safety benefit of it.
Absolutely. And remember, if you do get a moving violation citation from your local law enforcement or state law enforcement, think of it as community outreach. They're reaching out in the community. Let's talk about the challenge of making sure that you watch your blind spot, and not just yours, but everyone else's. Because I know when I'm out there driving sometimes, you know, you're looking and you're realizing that you're in somebody's blind spot. And if they make a move to the left, it could cause an issue. So tell us about why this is so critically important and the fact that you've really got to kind of be anticipating what the other person in their vehicle might do.
Blind spots are critical, especially as people change lanes. That's the time that it most often tends to hit in. Know if you're in someone else's and try to get out of it as quickly as you can. If you're on the interstate, 18-wheelers and even dump trucks and some sort of medium-sized trucks have these large blind spots that a lot of drivers can't appreciate. If you're pulled up real tight on this bumper, the truck driver can't see you. If you're tucked in up against the side of the trailer, there's a good chance he's not going to be able to see you and might fully cautiously change lanes and not know that you're there. So do the best you can for your sake to check your own blind spots, but also realize who others have.
Yes, it's so very, very important. And that leads us to number six, which is the importance of changing lanes defensively. I mean, I see this all the time. People just swerve their car to the left or right. They have no thought process whatsoever to what may be going on directly behind them.
Yep, and it feeds into number seven, which is signal your intentions. So you're changing lanes, use your turn signal. Communicate where you're going. Work your way partway in. If you can start to drift over into that lane, you can pause for a quarter second, a half second, just to be sure that other drivers aren't also coming into it, and then you can finish out your lane change. But if it's not a 50-50 ball on the basketball court or a fumble on the football field that you're diving in there trying to be the first one to come up with, it's more important that you be able to continue down the road than get that exact spot.
Absolutely. You alluded to this a little bit earlier, and I think this may be one that a lot of folks don't think about, but number eight is know your escape routes. Tell us about this.
Don't box yourself in. Realize that if you're merging lanes and you're not going to be able to – merging into traffic on the interstate, and if you're not going to be able to get over into that turn lane, over into the travel lane, slow down. Realize that you might be able to drive down the shoulder for a little bit. If you see a police officer or another emergency vehicle stopped on the side of the road, we have increasing awareness of move-over laws now where if there's a emergency lights up on the roadway, people are supposed to slow down and move over a lane of cushion. If you're in the middle lane and you realize people ahead of you are probably going to do that, anticipate it and slide a lane over. Or if they might do it, at least know people are probably going to do this, so I need to hit my brakes or I need to be able to slide over a lane if that situation arises.
Mm-hmm. That one that you just mentioned in terms of just being able to move over a lane when you see, police vehicles or emergency vehicles, please do that, folks. We're going to be having an upcoming interview segment reference to officer safety issues, because what happens so often is people see the red and blue lights or the blue red light, depending on where you're located across the country. And I call it the looky-loo syndrome, where people kind of slow down. They're looking to see what's going on. Next thing you know, you have, officers hit by a vehicle. In fact, a very, very good friend of mine on the D.C. Police Department several years ago, I had actually worked with him on a detail earlier in the day. I talked to him. I said, have a great day. Bye for now. Later in the day, he was actually struck and killed on a detail. So it is just so important to be aware of not only law enforcement, but the EMTs, the firefighters, the people that are going to respond to incidents. They really need your help and courtesy there. Number nine is yield to avoid a collision. And folks, remember, we said some of these things are pretty practical, but a lot of people don't think about this. Tell us about this, Justin.
If there's potential for a conflict, changing lanes, or coming up to a four-way stop and you're not sure who has the right-of-way, be ready to yield. Even if you do, in fact, have the right-of-way, you're better off not having the crash than being dead but right.
Yep, and again, it's common sense. You know, see, you're not sure, just take a pump of the brakes and wait. Number 10, get more control with 9 and 3. And if it's been a long time since you've been through driver training, a lot of people won't know what 9 and 3 is. Tell us about this.
It's where you put your hands on the steering wheel, 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock, left side and right side, or increasing or even teaching people to put down at 4 o'clock and 8 o'clock, just a little bit below the center line. A lot of drivers grew up in sort of the 10 and 2, where your hands were up on the top half of the steering wheel. Some people have progressed to having one hand at 12 and one hand over on the armrest. You want to have your hands at the side so that you can control the wheel and it's balanced, as well as if you do have a crash, avoid having the airbag pop up and knock your hands into the ceiling, where you could end up breaking fingers and wrists.
Yeah, you're not going to have a good day if that happens. So
certainly
it's kind
not.
Of funny when you think of 9-3 when you're going through the police academy and you're getting the vehicle dynamics and the apex of the turn and all this stuff. And, you know, but just the common sense stuff can save your life. Number 11, get out of a driver's only mindset. What is this all about?
You were sharing the road, but it's not just with other cars. The things that we do on the road, they impact pedestrians, cyclists, motorcyclists. So by law, you might be allowed to take a right on red. You might have realized, okay, there are no cars coming. I can go ahead and do it. If there are pedestrians at the corner, you need to make sure that they're not going anywhere, that they aren't legally allowed to cross the path, or that they are potentially not going to illegal, even if they don't have a walk signal, that they're not going to go. Again, it's recognized that your behavior will impact what happens for other people on the road, and especially pedestrians, cyclists, motorcyclists, they're especially vulnerable. If there's a crash, they tend to bear the worst of it.
Absolutely. You know, here's one that people may not think about, because when we think of traffic accidents, we basically think of, you know, being on a full roadway or going down a freeway or something. But, you know, oftentimes accidents occur when people are attempting to park, because oftentimes they're distracted. The drivers are, they're looking for a place. So this could be a real challenge. But this deals with backing in or pulling through to park. Tell us about this.
Parking lots are high-frequency locations for crashes, and while the vehicle-to-vehicle crash tends to be a very low-injury, low-impact one, they can be expensive, and that vehicle-to-pedestrian crash can be life-changing for that pedestrian. So you want to ensure that you have good sight lines as you go through the parking lot and as you're slowed down, and as you get to your actual parking space, you want to set yourself up so it'll be easy to get out of that parking space. Which means maybe drive a little further out. You don't need to hawk that closest in parking space. And if you pull a little further out in the parking lot, you might be able to just pull right through. It's two spaces that are sort of end-to-end, so that you won't have to put the car in reverse to get out of the parking space. If there is just a lone spot there, back into the spot on your way in where you can see and control what's going on around you versus trying to back out of it later on when you might have a pair of vans or something else next to you that will impact your vision, and where you'll be truly dependent and reliant on the courtesy of others to help you get out of that spot.
Yeah, and that's a good point from the personal safety side. If something happens and you need to, you know, exit an area, that's why oftentimes you'll see police cars that are actually backed into parking spaces so that in the event of an emergency, the officer needs to get out quickly. It's a little bit easier to do. So very, very important thing there. We've already kind of talked about this one, but it's so important. That's principle number 13, keep a cool head. In order to deal with situations on the road safely, you need to remember to be patient, be calm, be perceptive, and you'll need to be able to respond within reason. So we can't stress enough the importance of just being calm and collected when you're behind the wheel. Let's also talk about this one. It can never be expressed too often, and that is buckling up whenever you get behind the wheel.
It's basic safety equipment in every car produced since 1968, so odds are you got a three-point seatbelt in there, use it. You can get a ticket for not using it. More critically, you can get seriously hurt by not being buckled in. Crashes that fatal-type crashes, people can walk away with little or no injury because they wore their seatbelt. Even minor crashes, you can get hurt by not having your belt on. It's simple. It's there. Do it.
Indeed. Number 15, really, really one that we hear so often, don't drive under the influence, don't drive drunk, but also don't drive drowsy. And when we speak of under the influence, we're not just talking about alcohol, but you can have impaired driving just being under medications or other drugs. So that's a huge one. And then oftentimes, Justin, you know, people are working longer hours, they're more busy. So this idea that they get behind the wheel when they haven't had enough rest can also be a major factor impacting accidents.
I spent a couple years working midnight shifts, and probably a quarter of the cars that we pulled over would pull over thinking that it was a drunk driver. It's folks who are just tired. It's folks who'd worked a 12, 14, 16-hour day, or they were working an evening shift that carried them over until 2 or 3 in the morning, and it's a lot of the same driving behaviors. Fatigue is not well recognized, but it's a major safety risk.
Absolutely. And number 16, tune in. Tell us about this.
Get off the phone. Pay attention to what you're doing on the wheel. There are so many things that are there distraction-wise for us, and it's a message that we keep beating in for folks. But you got to be paying attention behind the wheel. So many of these other principles are hard to do if you're not aware of what's going on around you, if you're trying to engage in secondary tasks while driving. And this is the stuff that our kids learn from us at very young ages. One of my PhD friends in the safety world has a presentation that he likes to do that involves one of those little play school type driving setups that kids have. And you've got a steering wheel, you've got a horn, you've got a gear shift lever, and there's a phone built into the plastic console. I mean, this was a 10, 12-year-ago toy, but there's this sort of perception of this is part of what people do when they drive, when it absolutely shouldn't be.
Indeed. It's so interesting and so preventable in many, many cases. Justin McNall, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on the Code Red Show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Our special guest has been none other than Justin McNall. He's the Vice President of Public Affairs at eDriving.com. Be sure to check out the website. Again, it's www.eDriving.com. You can also check out www.driversed. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Melvin Patterson from the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. He's going to be stopping by the show to talk about National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day, which is taking place in local communities across America this coming Saturday, October 22nd. We'll be right back.
At least one in four businesses affected by a disaster never reopen. Let me repeat. At least one in four businesses affected by a disaster, whether it's man-made or natural, never reopen. Yet far too many business owners put off their company's disaster.
You have 5 new messages.
Can you sign it for me, please?
Don't forget those copies for presentation.
Disaster plan because they let too many day-to-day things get in the way.
Is that 3 p.m. going to be all right with your schedule?
Hey, don't forget that Stan proposes too.
Be in the conference room in 5 minutes, please.
Save your messages. Press 1.
Received dispatch. Truck 47 en route to 614 North Front Street.
Received. Be advised, truck 47. Heavy fire showing from the 9th floor. Second alarm being dispatched at this time.
Disasters are unpredictable, but when you have a plan in place, you can better adapt, recover, and stay in control. So don't wait. Visit ready.gov to make your company's disaster plan. Ready.gov. It's never too late to protect your business until it is. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Hey, welcome back. Joining us right now is Melvin S. Patterson. He is a spokesman for the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, commonly referred to as the DEA. Melvin is actually visiting this show to discuss the DEA's upcoming National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day that is actually taking place in communities across America this coming Saturday, October 22nd, 2016, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. This program was actually started way back in 2010. Melvin, what is the National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day all about?
Well, our active administrator, he's been quoted as saying most prescription drug abusers get their pills from family, friends, including household medicine cabinets. So this is a way to remove unwanted prescription drugs from homes and prevent a substance abuse fueled by our medicine cabinets.
You know, it's kind of interesting because I was just going to ask about that in terms of how this actually impacts helping to reduce misuse and abuse of prescription drugs.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, this is a unique opportunity for Americans to make their homes and medicine cabinets safe from theft and abuse.
Also, America is now presently experiencing an epidemic of addiction, overdoses, and deaths due to the abuse of prescription drugs, and particularly painkillers. And kind of like you've mentioned, you know, a lot of drug abusers start out raiding the medical cabinets and so forth, and then moving on to much harsher drugs, such as heroin.
That's a pattern that we've seen here going back 3 or 4 years. Really is scary to us. To make a point, every day 78 people die from opioid-related overdoses. And when I say opioid-related overdoses, I mean painkillers or prescription drugs. So that's something that concerns us greatly.
This take-back day actually happens twice a year, so that it really has been beneficial in communities across the country and so forth. Now, there are things known as collection locations where people can take their expired drugs or drugs that they no longer need, and they can actually take it to law enforcement agency locations and other community partners. Tell us a little bit about this side of the program.
We're excited about it because DEA is partnering with the state and local law enforcement throughout the country. As you mentioned, opening this segment, it's going to be this coming Saturday from 10 o'clock to 2 p.m. There's a lot of people out there that aren't sure where to take these drugs. If they just go to our website, DEA.gov, they'll see Got Drugs in red, white, and blue, a question mark afterwards. If they just click on that, it'll ask them to put in their zip code. Once they put in their zip code, it'll show them the closest collection sites right in their community.
And this is amazing because there's actually over 4,700 collection sites nationwide in all 50 states, and it's being operated by over 3,800 local law enforcement agencies and, as mentioned, other community partners. Now, keep in mind the service is absolutely free. There's no questions asked, but there are a couple of things that cannot be brought to the collection site. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that out. Tablets, capsules, and all other solid dosage forms will be collected. Unfortunately, liquids, including intravenous solutions, as well as syringes, will not be accepted.
So again, no liquids, no needles,
right,
or sharps and things like that.
Yes.
So specifically, medications and so forth. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency actually has some insight on how the proper disposal of medicines actually protects you and our global environment. These include things such as disposing of these drugs correctly. You prevent the potential for poisoning of small children and even pets. It actually deters misuse by teenagers and adults. You can also help avoid health problems from accidentally taking the wrong medicine, too much of the same medication, or medicine that is too old to work well. And it also keeps our medicines from entering streams and rivers when poured down the drain or flushed down the toilet. And, Melvin, you and I were talking yesterday about the importance of people making sure that they're not just flushing these drugs down the toilet because it does cause concerns.
Right. If you have an option to drop them off, I think this is obviously your best option. I know there's some things that people, the pills and coffee grinds and all that, but they still have the issue of disposal. So as opposed to throwing them in the trash and back into the environment, we just ask everyone that hears this message to please bring whatever you have to one of your local collection sites and help us take care of the community.
And again, the location that you can go for more details as to what's available right in your local area for collection centers, you can visit www.dea.gov. Again, that's www.dea.gov. You can also give them a call at 1-800-882-9539. Again, that's 800-882-9539. I want to go back real quick to one of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's insights on proper disposal of medicines, and that was the third one about avoiding health problems from accidentally taking the wrong medication. And I would just say for those folks that have extended families or situations where perhaps their elderly parents live in another area than they do and so forth, this could really help save a life because sometimes as people get older, they may get confused about their medications and so forth, and this could be a great way, to stop by if you're able to get over to their homes and so forth and kind of walk through, which medications they're on or not using, because oftentimes you'll have folks that are on multiple medications.
Fantastic point. Drug overdoses are our leading cause of injury-related death, and just remember, drug overdose, that is not intentional. No one is trying to overdose with drugs. So you always have some sort of confusion about the drug that they're taking, or they wind up taking too much. So this is now the leading cause of injury-related death in the United States. So it's a huge issue. So this is a huge response to what we've got going on in our country. So if we can get as many people to participate in the Drug Take Back 12 here, I think we will be headed in the right direction here.
Absolutely. You know, Melvin, another thing is people don't realize just how many tons of prescription drugs that this program has helped recover. Can you tell us a little bit about just the stats from the last event that occurred? Because I think people would be very, very surprised that this is really very effective in helping reduce some of those drugs that are in our communities across the country.
Yeah, so this past April 30th of this year, National Take Back 11, the total weight collected in pounds was 893,408 pounds, which equates to 447 tons of pills, so unwanted and unused medication. So that was a fantastic outing. And we anticipate the numbers to be above those numbers as well.
Absolutely. And you had mentioned when we were talking yesterday about, you know, working with the DEA Museum, which is located in Arlington, Virginia, and the fact that as you participate in things at that particular museum for Drug Enforcement Administration, that oftentimes people have no idea that this program actually exists. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm one of the people that if people come and tour our DEA Museum, a lot of times they request an agent to come down and speak to them about just the intricacies of being an agent and other things related to DEA. So I go down, and one of the things I ask most of the tour groups that come through is, have they heard of our National Take Back Day? And it's amazing to me how many people still are unaware of it. So that tells me that we've got a lot of work to do getting the word out, making people aware that now they have a very viable option of getting rid of unused and unwanted pain medication or prescription medication.
You know, also, there was one other thing you mentioned when we were preparing for this particular interview, and that was the good side and the bad side of the program as it goes forward. Tell us a little bit about this.
Well, you know, I mentioned the amount in tons that we collected this past April was 447 tons, and we expect to probably collect more than 447 this time, but that's a number we'd like to see start going down. And I think that that would indicate to me that we are getting a better control on how we're handling prescription pain medication. So that's a number here really soon we'd like to see start going down. Obviously, we want to collect as much as we can as we get the word out. So maybe the next couple of takebacks, that number goes up, but then eventually starts to go down. Another thing is I know that there's a couple of states out there that they do a collection year-round. So as we tally things up, their numbers are really low. I know in particular Oklahoma, they always have really low numbers. And I remember I looked into Oklahoma having worked there in the past, and I was really curious as to why their numbers are so low. But they have year-round collection sites, so that's why their numbers aren't very high.
Absolutely. And this is such a powerful program. Since the program began 6 years ago, about 6.4 million pounds, that's about 3,200 tons of drugs have been collected. That's more than a quarter pound of pills for each of the 25 million children aged 12 through 17 in America, pills that won't result in abuse or overdose. So what a very, very powerful program. Again, it is called the National Prescription Drug Take Back Day. It's coming up in local communities across America this coming Saturday, October 22nd, 2016, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. For more information, you can visit www.dea.gov. Again, that's www.dea.gov, or give them a call at 800-882-9539. Again, that's 800-882-9539. Melvin Patterson from the DEA. We'd like to thank you very much for joining us today on the Code Red Show.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back. You're listening to Code Red with Alfred McCumber.
I heard on the news about that five-year-old who found his uncle's gun. The kid didn't know it was loaded.
I heard on the news about that 14-year-old girl who was bullied online for like a year. She couldn't take it anymore, so she got her dad's gun from his nightstand.
I heard on the news about that guy who broke into someone's house, stole a gun from the hall closet.
He accidentally shot his cousin in the head.
She killed herself.
And later, killed the owner of the store he was trying to rob.
If you own a gun, you have a full-time responsibility. When you aren't using it, be sure it can't get into the hands of curious children, at-risk teens, a thief, or anyone else who might misuse it. Your family, friends, and neighbors are all counting on you to store your firearm safely. Remember, always lock it up. For more information on firearm storage safety, visit ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and the Ad Council.
As a mom, I never realized how important it is to stay in the kitchen while cooking, especially when using high heat, like when I'm frying, grilling, or broiling food. Until I learned that cooking is the main cause of home fires and injuries, and that most cooking fires start when someone's frying food. I know I can prevent a fire in my home by being a safe cook, because fire is everyone's fight. For more information on how to keep your family safe from home fires, visit www.usfa.fema.gov.
Hey, welcome back to the Code Red Show. I want to thank you so much for joining us today to learn important teen driver safety tips, as well as more information about the DEA Prescription Drug Take-Back Day that's coming up this coming Saturday. If you have questions, reference to the interview recently with Justin McNall, Vice President of Public Affairs at eDriving.com. You can give them a call at 800-243-4008. Again, that number, 800-243-4008. Don't forget their websites, www.edriving.com, as well as www.driversed.com. Two great websites, lots of fantastic information. Also on the show, Melvin S. Patterson with the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. He stopped by the show specifically to talk about the National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day, which is taking place in local communities across the country this coming Saturday, October 22nd. 2016. For more details and to find a collection point in your local community, be sure to visit www.dea.gov. Again, that's www.dea.gov. You can also give them a call for information on a collection site near you by calling 1-800-882-9539. Again, that's toll-free, 1-800-882-9539. I want to give you a quick programming note. Next Wednesday, October 26, 2016, on our show, we will feature New York Times bestseller and former U.S. Navy SEAL, Mr. Clint Emerson. He's going to be stopping by the show live to talk about his brand new book. He just came out with a book. It's called 100 Deadly Skills, The Survival Edition. We're so excited to have him on the show. We're going to be talking about a whole host of things, such as how to become crisis-proof, how to build a personal evacuation kit, fortifying your home security, eluding ransomware attacks, learning more about how to handle situations that may involve a terrorist situation. So all sorts of great information that we're going to be sharing on the Code Red Show next Wednesday, October 26th of 2016. And again, that's former U.S. Navy SEAL retired Clint Emerson. And the book is called 100 Deadly Skills Survival Edition. I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the Code Red Show. And as we close out, remember to be vigilant, be prepared, and be safe. Until next time, take care.
I'm driving.